Hey, how's it going, everybody? You're listening to the season premiere of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
Season 11. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Carl, you're sounding really nice and lovely in my headphones today.
Oh, thanks, Will.
Sort of a different recording setup. Normally, Carl sounds very sort of noisy and spacious in his room, but now it's nice, crisp, clear audio that I'm getting.
Yeah, this is closer to how the audience hears me every week. So now Will gets to have the same star treatment that you guys have. We are so excited to be back with you.
I really think I'm just going to like hardly talk at all in this episode. I'm so enjoying hearing the pleasant, dulcet tones of your voice.
I would be surprised if that happened, because the title of today's episode is El Fine.
Yeah, we're so excited. The idea for today's episode really started from just years of doing this podcast and, you know, listening to so much looped video game music, and also listening to a lot of music that possibly has longer forms, but just due to the constraints of the show, we often have to fade down early and we don't get to listen through to the entirety of a piece of music.
For sure.
And being composers ourselves, we know that, you know, some music is short and simple, and by getting to that loop point, you really experience the entire thing. But there's so much music that really is an entire experience. It's about listening to it from start to finish. And what we notice is that we really rarely get to explore the ending, the finality of a piece of music on this podcast.
So, Will, if someone isn't familiar, what does El Fine mean?
I believe it means to the end. It's a musical term that comes up a lot in sheet music. You'll see like DC El Fine or DS El Fine. It essentially means either to go back to the beginning or go back to a symbol and play to the end. But fine means the end.
Yeah, so simply put, what we're focusing on today is the endings of these pieces. Now, we've gotten various emails and comments over the years about people saying, oh, I wish you would have played more of that tune, or I wish we could have heard the ending. And we totally agree. We wish we could do that more often. So today, we're going to focus exclusively on the endings of every track we're playing today.
And it's not so much about, you know, like the last measure or the last note or anything. It's just more about sort of examining that second half. You know, oftentimes, let's say if a piece of music is like 7 minutes long, we'll only play like the first 2 minutes.
Sure.
But what about the next part of that music? So we really want to take a look. A lot of these pieces are things that we've played before that should be familiar to a lot of you.
Yeah, so we're going to cover a couple different types of endings when it comes to video games. You guys probably shouldn't be surprised that a lot of the music we're going to play today is more modern, because when we think of modern video game music, it traditionally doesn't have those short loops that we had in the past. You have full-blown recordings that have actual endings. So we'll have some examples of that, and we're going to have some other fun examples of endings
games. That's kind of the main point here, is the format of our podcast really comes from that. In the early days of the show, we were pretty much only focusing on retro game music, which almost all consists of tunes that have a loop. Sometimes it's 30 seconds, sometimes it's 2 minutes. But there's a point that the music has to loop in order to function endlessly in a game experience.
Well, yeah, you know what's fitting is the timing's great here. Let's take a listen to the first ending of the day. We'll fade up our opening track. Let's take a listen. Awesome. So that's going to get the ball rolling today. That was Tie a Link of Arcus from The Legend of Heroes Sen no Kiseki by Falcom Sound Team JDK, and definitely a nice modern rocking ending.
Pretty rocking way to start out the day. What's interesting is some of you may know this, but we recently, you know, started playing the Super Mercado Brothers as sort of a retro game music cover band.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole concept of ending video game music sort of became this challenge, because, you know, in games when we're listening to a soundtrack, you know, you can just dial it down. It can fade out after a while. But to actually perform it, you need to decide, you know, when are we going to end? Is it just at the end of the loop? Does it have to go back to the top of the head?
Yeah, so that was a challenge we had, particularly in the old school stuff that we played.
And what I think is cool is a lot of this modern Falcom music is still composed
in that style.
In the style, yeah, of retro game music. So I imagine those composers are sort of experiencing similar, you know, challenges.
Sure.
Either if it's just for the soundtrack version of the experience, or for the game itself.
So what's fun is you guys just heard a modern example. Let's go back to a really old school example of a piece of video game music that actually has a proper ending. And in this day, this is a track for the FDS, so we could consider this the NES era here.
Famicom Disk System.
The only examples of endings in music would be little jingles and then the end credits theme. The end credits right. theme for these games would typically have an ending, and that's the case here. So let's definitely showcase on that side of video game music. We're going to play the credits theme from Metroid for the Famicom Disk System, composed by Hirokazu Hip Tanaka. Let's take a listen.
Listening to the credits from Metroid, it's great hearing this FDS version because they have the additional channel, and we can really tell from this early on in video games just the influence that films and film music had on the composition here.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of credits theme is really meant to feel like the ending of a film, and it's very
for
emotional
sure.
and the writing feels almost sort of symphonic in nature.
I think it's the most beautiful melody that Hip Tanaka ever composed. It's so soaring and beautiful.
I completely agree. And it so evolves, you know, this piece, much like the later things we'll hear.
Well, guys, fear not. We are going to cover the ending. Let's fade up and listen to the ending of the credits here. That's how you do it. Wow, one of the most epic endings in the NES era. Hirokazu Hip Tanaka here with the credits from the original Metroid. He was so inspired, you can tell, when he was composing this piece of music. He really went all out. I think it makes a lot of sense because a lot of the music in this game is very atmospheric and
yeah.
it's much more simple than this piece. This piece is just very, very complex. There's a lot of interlocking lines, moving lines.
Sure. Well, and again, that influence of film music, not just in terms of sort of style, but I think in terms of form and of narrative, you know, I mean, the function of credits like this, I mean, it was, you know, video games trying to seem like films. What I think Hirokazu Tanaka does so great in just talking about not just the ending, but the overall form is that it's so cyclical in nature.
Right.
It starts with those kind of rhythms, which feels, you know, like very orchestral kind of symphonic rhythms. Dun, 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 dun. You know, it feels very much like film music.
Sure.
And then the piece sort of evolves. There's all these beautiful lyrical passages. I mean, for a piece that was written on the NES, there's so much to praise about register. The melody in the beginning and ending is in the low register. And as it develops, you have things really high in sort of soprano voices. It really feels like the impression of a symphony.
Well, my favorite thing about this Metroid ending theme is that this is something that is true of the best 8-bit music, is that it kind of connects the dots in your imagination where you feel like you're listening to an orchestra here, even though you're listening to these really primitive bleeps and bloops.
Right. Because it's about
symphonic.
The writing. It's about
yeah,
the music and how it's composed.
The writing is symphonic. And when that happens, when you hear a really clear kind of thought and a clear melodic contour, then your brain fills in those dots, and it's just, it's in such an enjoyable experience.
Well, and to talk about the ending itself, I mentioned that sort of rhythmic motif that happens at the beginning. It sort of ties itself together at the ending with that. Mm-hmm. But I really like, it's almost like a nod to like John Williams or something. It has that last little tag,
and then also
end.
One of my my favorite thing is the interval that he creates on that very last chord. I think it might be a ninth, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's this really sort of extended harmony, which, again, so influential for the rest of this series, this track in particular. The other thing that I love, though, we talked about how orchestral it is. One of my favorite moments is he introduces just the most gorgeous lyrical theme, with this really sort of sparse presentation, and then this like dance beat comes in, and it's just it's so
great.
But then
great. the actual ending of this piece ties everything together, and I can't think of another NES or 8-bit era ending theme that is that rousing.
Well, we've talked about this before, but what's really exciting about, to me, video game music in the early days is that the credits were sort of the point when there was sort of a self-awareness about the fourth wall. This is the first point where, to me, they're almost speaking directly to the audience. And
sure.
So that moment where that like dance beat comes in, it feels inappropriate for
like
the rest of the
job.
Music in this game. But yeah, it's really meant to congratulate you as the player.
Well, let's move on to a more modern example of an ending as far as a piece of music goes. There's another pretty popular instance of endings in maybe like the mid-90s era. This was one of the first games to feature an actual live recorded orchestra. And the main opening theme of a game is a great time to have an ending. And this is an example of that. Let's play a little bit of it and let you guys know what to listen for this ending in the context of the game, and then we'll take a listen. This is the main title from Heart of Darkness by the wonderful composer Bruce Broughton. You guys are listening to the main title from Heart of Darkness for the PC, which is one of our favorite games, actually, of all time. We're a huge fan of this game. This is composed by Bruce Broughton. You're listening to one of the first things you hear in the game. Will, can you briefly set up what is about to happen and why this piece ends the way it does?
So yeah, you're seeing the opening titles, and it's this beautiful cinematic that takes you through space, and you sort of hear these voices of somebody almost narrating like a journey of like scientific discovery and all this stuff, and you kind of don't know what's happening. It sets the tone for the game, but what's exciting is it sets up right as the music ends. You realize that your character is being woken up because he fell asleep in class. Let's take a listen.
Wow, that is so effective. I'll never forget the first time I heard and saw that. It was one of the most cinematic and like noticeably cinematic moments in a game that I had ever seen.
Right.
You know, because it's so in the forefront. Like the composer and the designer and the director, like everyone was on the same page to create this really emotional effect that reminds me of like an 80s Spielberg movie.
Well, sure. It's a great way of actually getting the story going. And I can't think of a lot of films that do that, where, you know, you're in this beautiful opening cinematic, and then all of a sudden you just hear this loud sound and it just says Andy, and you're right into the story,
right?
You know, and the music and everything is so abrupt. I thought that was such a great effect. And what's cool is that narration I was talking about, where they're talking about space and, you know, electrons and all this kind of sciencey stuff. You realize that Andy, this the main character, had fallen asleep in science class. So it was the voice of his teacher that he was hearing.
Well, I feel like the way that it's used here, I think you're right, is quite rare, at least how effective it is. But it does remind me of these openings for these kids' movies, like even something like Toy Story 2, where that has this really awesome action-packed sci-fi opening, and then you realize it's a video game.
Sure.
I feel like those kinds of openings are so fun.
Yeah, it's very cinematic and really sort of delightful. And let's just talk about Bruce's music. This is a theme we've played many times on the podcast because it's just one of our favorites. Bruce Broughton, an absolutely incredible film composer. His television work, his film work, he's one of the greatest, one of the great living composers, in my opinion. This theme is so fantastic, and I think one of the great things about this game, it's really trying to fulfill the promise of an interactive film, an interactive story that feels up to the caliber of movie level cinematic value. And the score and the whole introduction to this game is a big part of what makes it effective. Talking about that ending again, what's so great is musically, you really feel like you're building up to a finish. You know, all the rhythms get sort of truncated and it's very harmonically wandering. There's these syncopated rhythms, bam, 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 bam. But instead of hitting on this kind of final note, he just leaves it empty because it's interrupted by the narrative. It's interrupted by the dialogue.
Well, I'm just so glad to give context to that, because if someone just listened to the soundtrack, they might not know why it ends the way it does. And it's so effective in game how this ends. And then right. as soon as the last note you hear in the orchestra, and then Andy right away. It's so abrupt and it's just great. So let's move on to another example of an ending for a modern video game. What are some outside genres that feature endings? Pretty much everything, like song form. Anytime you have a song that's like sung and you have maybe like a small ensemble backing it up, you're obviously going to have an ending, right? You're not going to fade out. I mean, every once in a while you will.
Well, I mean, a lot of popular music does have this idea of like a fade out ending. In fact, something that the Beatles were sort of notable for,
they
especially
had a lot
in their
of those.
Early days, is that they had endings, that it was sort of a common tradition to just have the fader be dialed down at the end of
sure.
tracks, and it was sort of important for them to sort of compose these endings, these completed pieces.
Well, if you go back earlier to maybe show tune era of like 30s and 40s, you had pretty much every single song had a very well-composed, flashy ending, and that's what you get here.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, Carl, in that recorded music and I guess technological music is sort of some of the first places where we started to see this idea of that music could kind of be cyclical and doesn't actually need an ending. But it's sort of from a live tradition, either a theatrical tradition or, you know, actual performed music that requires an ending. So it seems natural and makes sense why for so much of the early days of game music, an ending just sort of seemed antithetical because it didn't function with the game experience.
So this is a really awesome, swanky, jazzy throwback song called Dousei Shinun Dakara from Gravity Rush. This is not the first track that I would necessarily think of Gravity Rush, but Gravity Rush does have this jazzy, swanky side to its soundtrack that is so delightful. Let's take a listen to this piece composed by Kohei Tanaka. All right, guys, you're listening to Dousei Shinun Dakara from Gravity Rush. Let's skip ahead here. We're going to do a fade, crossfade to the ending of this piece, and let's talk about how it fits this wonderful song. Here we go. Oh, Oh, that is so wonderful. It fakes you out. So it slows down. It does that wonderful retard and da-da-da-da-da-da. You think that's the ending. And then there's this really awesome riff. And like we said before, it's a flashy ending that's going to make the audience just go stand up and cheer. And that's what happens with this ending.
Well, it's also, there's like kind of a humor to it. I feel like that sort of became a popular thing in the 90s, where a lot of songs had these like fake out endings where you thought everything was done and then you wait like 5 seconds and it keeps going.
Right.
That's sort of like a fun little, that's always sort of a fun little moment. And, you know, normally, especially when I'm ever in like with another person, when a song like that happens, people always smile and laugh. And I think there's a sense of humor in that. We all kind of know the conventions of a song for the most part. Even if we can't articulate them musically, we sort of understand and can feel, you know, this thing feels like it's wrapping up.
Right.
And so when something knowingly subverts that, there is sometimes this reaction of laughter or humor because it's almost like making a musical joke. And I think this music that's so light and swanky and fun, it perfectly fits and captures that kind of humorous quality.
Well, I think this is timely that we're playing this because at time of recording, Gravity Rush 2 is out and the soundtrack is hopefully going to be released fairly soon. I cannot wait for that soundtrack.
Yeah,
I've heard a lot of buzz
really
about how great it
is.
So, yeah, I mean, the ending of this track is just as authentic as the rest of the pieces. It feels like this traditional kind of swanky jazz tune from the 30s.
Yeah, it's just a great song.
Mm-hmm, it's so good. All right, now let's move on to another track here. And this one, it's timed perfectly. We're going to be able to play the entire piece, which has a very specific ending.
Yeah, I want to describe sort of what happens to those of you that haven't played this game. The track is from Super Mario 3D World, and the piece we're going to be playing is from a level called Switch Scramble Circus. And what's fun about this level is it makes the player aware of the music because the progress you make in the level affects what part in the form of the song you're at.
Right.
So instead of like most video game music that has sort of a repeated looped form, this song has separate repeated loopable sections. So if you're in the A section, as long as you're in this first part of the stage, the music will loop until you get to the next area, and then the B section will loop, and then the next area, and then the C section will loop. And what's amazing is my first time playing through the game, somehow they timed it out so that by the time you hit the flagpole, it completes the end of the song.
It's perfect.
And it has this very kind of flamboyant, over-the-top kind of vaudeville-y ending.
Yeah, this is, I definitely think, one of the most memorable pieces of music early on in the game. That it was in the foreground and you actually noticed how effective the music is.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it has great melodies, but the ending of it is particularly of note because it almost feels like it's scoring your specific actions. It's amazing. I don't know how they did it.
Well, let's take a listen to Switch Scramble Circus. It feels like we're in a parade, right? This is Switch Scramble Circus from Mario 3D World, composed by Mihiro Yokoda. Very fitting, and talk about sense of humor. This whole track has, you know, a really big sense of humor. It's like it's constantly winking at the player. It's cartoon music, really, is what it is.
Well, and that's such a great aspect of Mario music. What I love about this piece, though, is yes, it has those sort of tongue-in-cheek elements, but it's brilliantly composed. I mean, that B section, the bridge with
that's just classic, like Galaxy style music.
Yeah, it's beautifully Mario. In the ending, with that sort of Koji Kondo cadence, where you have those sort of chromatically descending voices, is so wonderful. The other thing that's brilliant about this piece is when you actually hit the flagpole, it strikes the last chord regardless of where in the song you are. But what's something cool about how it's composed is that ending, you have bum. So there's, when you think about it, there's so many different points that you could end that would feel satisfying, because it would feel satisfying is ba-da-dum, or ba-da-da-dum, or
that's kind of how they make it work.
You know,
it's
so they make it work so that you have a little bit of leeway as far as like running through that part of the stage. And I swear to God, my first time playing through the level,
it was perfect.
It like synced up perfectly, and I had no idea how it happened.
Yeah, I think they play tested it to the point where they designed it to be a normal human speed is when it's going to fit perfectly. You know, so cool. Well, let's do this for this next track. Why don't we fade up at the last little chunk of this, because we've played this track before. This is Dragonborn from the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, composed by Jeremy Soule, but I don't believe we've ever had time to focus on the ending of it, and it's a 4-minute piece. So why don't we just fade in here for the last chunk of this piece and listen to the ending of Dragonborn from Skyrim. Wow, fading into nothing, and you just have those ambient either drum, tribal drum, or maybe thunder sounds, and that's actually how this track starts too, so it comes full circle. Really glad we got to focus on that last part of that track, because it's such a beautiful ending, and it's much more unique than most of his endings. What was funny is this week we were listening to the endings of all these tracks, and which normally that's not what we focus on. So I was listening to all of the Elder Scrolls stuff, particularly focusing on the endings, and a lot of the endings are just very kind of by the books, but this was one that I thought was very powerful.
Well, because I think still, you know, a lot of video game music, it is meant to sort of seeg in and out of other things, and it's dependent on the player experience. So the idea of having like a musical ending is sometimes just for people listening to a soundtrack.
Sure.
What's so great, though, I'm glad you mentioned the term full circle, because that's something that we've mentioned before, and it seems to be sort of a running theme with a lot of these longer form pieces. One way of structuring a composition formally is sort of the idea of tying different motifs or different ideas through from the beginning to the end.
Sure.
And similar, like we talked about this in Metroid, is starting the way you finish is a way of introducing a seemingly complex musical form, but making it feel simple by tying everything in sort of a nice bow at the end. It's almost
Absolutely.
Like if you imagine Disney opening the storybook and closing the storybook. What I think is great about this theme is all of you probably recognized that melody mm-hmm. either from our various episodes talking about it, or maybe you play the games yourself.
Sure.
I personally have never played an Elder Scrolls game, but that melody is just so iconic to me that it's really such a testament. And Jeremy Soule, the composer,
it's a modern
of this game,
classic.
Yeah, he has a very famous method of production and sort of arranging, and he uses all these amazing innovative techniques using sort of his own breathing to mm-hmm. influence the expression of the instruments.
I mean, I will say that this melody of the main melody here of Dragonborn is probably one of the most iconic in the 2010s decade of video game music. I mean, I can't
sure.
think of another one.
It's a bold claim, but I couldn't argue.
It's there. All right, well, let's go back to the old school era of game music and talk about a very unique and popular facet of endings. There's one reason why, if you're in the 16-bit era, let's say on the Super NES or Genesis, you are going to have at least one piece of music that has a distinct ending. It's going to be the game over theme, right? And
or a
it
death
signifies,
jingle.
Yeah, the end of the player's journey. So we're talking about endings in more ways than one. Let's take a listen to the game over theme from Donkey Kong Country 2, composed by David Wise. Here we go. Will, I think this is incredibly effective. Do you have any thoughts on what are some of the emotions that Dave is trying to convey in this game over theme for the player?
Well, it's funny. I do think he and a lot of composers did learn so much from Koji Kondo in the traditions that Nintendo sort of established with all this stuff. The idea that the game over is almost kind of like taunting you in a way.
Yeah.
And also that mixed with kind of this bluesiness ending on that, you know, dominant seventh chord is something that you get in Mario World.
Well, I think the bluesiness is important because it softens the blow. It is taunting you, but it's not that mean because it's having fun, and it's just
right.
always keeping the tongue in the cheek. One thing that I think is effective is that this is kind of a variation of one of the stage clear jingles in the game.
And that's something that happens a lot with these game over themes, is the idea that it's sort of a sad or a slower tempo arrangement or variation on an existing theme in the game, whether it's a principal theme or in this case, like Carl mentioned, sort of a stage clear theme, which when you sort of start to think about it, it poses this great duality where this is sort of what's the opposite of clearing the stage successfully, being defeated and getting game over.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat that the same musical material is used for both. You know, that's sort of one of a classic video game convention.
Yeah, for me, I think that's one of my personal favorite 16-bit era game over jingles. It's just so classic
well,
to me.
Something that I just want to talk about a little bit is the context of all this music in the game. Let's take the original Super Mario Brothers just as an example, because I think we could probably all agree it's probably one of the most popular games, and it's sort of like Star Wars in the sense that most people who've seen films have seen Star Wars, and most people that have played games have played Mario.
Right.
When you think about your experience in that game, the first piece of music you hear, the overworld theme, it doesn't really have an ending. The only time you experience an ending is
the
either
death jingle.
Abruptly, yeah, when your character dies, and then that does sort of function as an ending to that piece of music, or just abruptly by saying going down a warp pipe and
sure.
entering and getting new music, or by completing the level. But every time that happens, the music track just cuts out and a new thing begins. So you never actually get a complete ending to that song.
Well, it's so great. I think a testament to the power of that theme is that almost every time I hear a remix or an arrangement live, what does the band do? They end with dun 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 dun. It just feels like that's the ending of
or
the piece.
Or they end with completing the stage, because
sure.
that's sort of our experience of that music. We can't separate it from its context.
Well, I'm excited to move on to another modern rocking track that has a really great ending. This is from Ease Origin, which came out for the PC. And when we had our Ease, I think, part two episode, we focused on not just the first two games in the series, but some of the later games. And Ease Origin was one of our favorite in the series. Really wonderful music here. The composers we have are Meiko Ishikawa, the classic Ease composer, Hayato Sonata, as well as Takahiro Unisuga. Let's take a listen to, this is just a wonderful Japanese rock song that combines some pretty expressive and beautiful violin playing mixed with the hard rock band. It's Genesis Beyond the Beginning from Ease Origin. Makes me really happy to get to showcase this track again. This is Genesis Beyond the Beginning from Ease Origin for the PC.
So
and I think it may have been our track of the week on that Ease Part 2 episode way back in season one, but it's a rocking track that has a beautiful melody. The way that the violin is interacting with the rock band is so intense, and you have these like choir samples hitting the offbeats, ba, 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 and it's just so epic. Like, I wish that this kind of music was the norm for kind of JRPGs, because it's rocking, but it's thoughtfully composed. Let's fade up here and hear the ending of this track. Wow. So I want to make what I said clear. I wasn't trying to disparage JRPG music. I guess what I was saying is that usually when something rocks, that's the focus of why it's cool. And when something's beautiful or like really well crafted, that's why it's cool. But this is a track that has everything going for it. It's rocking harder than most JRPG music I can think of, but it's also so crafted and beautiful, and it's kind of winning in all fronts here, and that's why I think this is amazing.
Well, and again, with that idea of things coming full circle, we start with this beautiful lyrical melody that has a lot of kind of longing, and it's very evocative, quite an emotional theme. And then to transition from that into this more rhythmic kind of rock idea. Mm-hmm. And then I love that the piece at the end, we get some more little tastes of that violin, and it gives us one last reprise of the bap, 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 bap.
And what a great way to end it.
Sort of syncopated.
Just a classic Ease ending. Like, if I was going to end an Ease track, that's definitely the right choice.
Well, and again, that's something that we mentioned earlier, but playing in this band where we're having to cover a lot of retro game music.
Yeah, we're covering an Ease song,
actually.
You
do have to kind of be clever in terms of how you're going to end it.
Sure.
Do you go to the end of the form and then play one final chord? Or, you know, is there another point in the form that feels like a good ending spot?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you actually have to compose new music to sort of create an ending.
Or do you do the hardest thing ever, which is a live fade out, where you actually fade your volume, stage volume down to zero?
Everyone
I've tried that before.
Super quiet.
It's really hard to do that. So we're going to move on to probably my personal favorite credits theme as far as how it ends on the Sega Genesis. This is so rousing and orchestral. This type of writing is just not not ever heard on the Genesis. This is a diamond in the rough. It's Shining Force 2, composed by one of my favorite composers, Motowaki Takanouchi. This is the ending here of Shining Force 2, and it's an entire piece of music. There's really not a lot of repetition. The way that this ends is so epic and just feels like something that we'd hear in a film. And I think for that reason, it's probably the most impressive, like, credits theme that I've heard on the Genesis, because like the Super Nintendo, it's chock full of this kind of stuff. Like, this would just be par for the course, but on the Genesis it really does feel very impressive. So let's take a listen to the ending from Shining Force 2. Is so wonderful. I'm really excited to get to the actual ending of this piece, but it's so Williams-y to me. Like, definitely he's trying to evoke kind of just like the rousing triumphant feelings that we all got, you know, in the 80s movie theaters, you know, coming out of something like E.T. Or, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark or something. It's just, yeah, it's such wonderful writing, and he's trying his best to make the Genesis feel symphonic. I think he does a great job.
Yeah, I mean, definitely influenced from film music of all sorts,
mm-hmm.
Japanese film music as well. But I think, yeah, just very orchestral in nature, particularly dealing with the extremes of dynamic range and contrast, that you have those moments where you can almost imagine really quiet arco strings bowing the chords and maybe a solo trumpet, to these moments of really full 2D brass and strings coming in. It's really great that that can be achieved just on the Genesis.
Well, let's take a listen to the actual ending here, because I think it's very powerful. Here we go.
That's really cool.
Oh, that is so badass. Takanouchi, one of a kind.
Well, what I so love in a piece of music like that, particularly an orchestral piece, is when it can sort of, there's lots of different kinds of music. There's some music that's sort of impressionistic. There's some music that's meant to be very rubato and expressive, and tempo is sort of free. But I really love when a piece of music can establish a tempo, create kind of this machine almost with this pulse and this drive, and bring it to a satisfying conclusion. It's really this satisfying moment, because it's the first time we receive pause after, you know, this whole kind of constructed, elaborate device has just been moving and propelling us forward and forward, and getting that moment of silence is so powerful in a piece like that.
I think credits serve a very important role, and the composer really has a lot riding on it, because let's say you had a positive experience playing a game like Shining Force 2. If you had a good experience, but the credits left you feeling just like so triumphant and just this epic positive feeling, you're going to go away from that game being like, yeah, that was awesome.
Some of my favorite video game memories are just watching the credits,
right?
Because you're filled with this euphoria of, I beat the game, which especially was a big deal back in the 8 and 16-bit era.
I do think the music, if the music's amazing for the credits, it almost kind of exaggerates how good the game is more than it maybe even it should. Like, you know, you're left with feeling this is an amazing game.
Well, something I like about this specific form, and you know, it's fun analyzing these full pieces, because so often on the podcast we're analyzing short form, or we're just talking about scratching the surface of a a longer piece of music. But what's fun about playing the whole thing and experiencing the form is what this piece does differently than some of the other pieces, which what I love is instead of growing larger and larger and larger up to the finish, this piece actually, it sort of backs off and tapers off towards the end. We reach a quieter dynamic emotionally. It's kind of this like nadir. It's this low point.
But then it comes back.
And then it sort of all rises back for the final few bars. I really like it. It's almost sort of like storytelling where you have sort of the rising action, the climax, and then the falling action, and you have sort of the low point, and a piece can kind of come together. There's so many different ways of composing, but I really think a big part of the art of music is not just in writing a melody or coming up with a functional loop.
But
a lot of times it's about the idea of crafting a full thing from beginning to end. This is your palette.
And it should be mentioned that arguably the most important section of a piece of music is the ending. That's the last thing people hear. It's going to leave them with whatever emotion you're trying to leave them
the
with.
The beginning so and ending,
There's one other facet of video game scoring where endings are very common and important, and that's cutscene music. Music that has a static, definite length. Let's say it's 40 seconds. Let's say it's a minute 30. You're scoring
because then
for
it works
that,
like film score.
Exactly. You're scoring for that cinematic, and that has an ending. Let's take a listen to some cutscene music here. This comes to us from Sonic Lost World. In this particular cutscene track, all of the cutscene music was actually composed by Takahito Iguchi. Let's take a listen to Even a Rose Has Thorns. What a wonderful choice. That's cutscene music there. It's Even a Rose Has Thorns from Sonic Lost World, composed by Takahito Iguchi. Really beautiful celeste and clarinet little duet here. I don't know. It's man, that's so expressive. Will, you were singing a song that this progression reminded you of.
Well, it's the same chords as Summertime by George Gershwin from Porgy and
Classic.
Bess. Those sort of two half diminished chords moving back and forth, or I guess in the jazz world they'd be minor six chords.
Yeah, what a tasteful and unique choice.
Really,
I remember
beautiful.
In the context of Lost World, wonderful soundtrack, but very colorful and like Latin and
high energy. Yeah.
So to get this cutscene music is just a really nice change of pace. And I remember this particular track really wowed us on our Spotlight episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's a richer sense of harmony than I think we get. A lot of this game sort of uses, you know, like pop music harmony,
sure,
which is great and feels totally Sonic. And this is something that's a little bit more evocative, a little richer, and it's evoking genre too with like the clarinet and everything. It has this old school swanky jazz feeling to it.
Well, let's move on to a piece of music that we're going to play in its entirety and then talk about. This comes to us from LucasArts composers, the Dream Team. This game was scored by Michael Land, Clint Bajakian, and Peter McConnell. Now, we were told from one of our interviews with Peter that all the music on Scab Island was composed by Michael, so this piece falls under that. This is Largo Legrand, his theme. He's the first villain that you really interact with in the game. And what's great about the endings with the Scum games is that depending, kind of similar to that Mario 3D World example, depending on when you leave, there's a different part of the measure that they would have to, he probably composed like four separate endings that would come up depending on when you left that stage, you know, as far as where you are in the song. So let's take a listen to this. Has a really fun ending here. Largo Legrand from Monkey Island 2. Thank you. another one of those wonderful little fake out endings there. That was Largo Legrand from Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge. That was composed by Michael Land. And yeah, that's just a classic LucasArts melody. It reminds me, it's kind of a similar territory to Doug the Mole Man and Sam and Max, sure, as far as having so much chromaticism and so much, like, I guess, sense of humor and goofiness injected into this piece. But it's
jazz writing.
Oh my God. It's
so
just
great.
An absolute classic. I think Michael's is just a genius composer. Yeah,
Michael is just one of the greatest theme writers in video game music. I mean, with the Monkey Island main theme, LeChuck's theme, Largo's theme, these sort of character themes are so fantastic. And this one in particular, even if you've never played the
game, personally,
I think you can get a sense of what kind of character Largo is just from that music.
I know for a fact that Will's favorite part is ba-doom, 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 when the clarinet comes in on the B section. It's so jazzy and fun. You know, he's obviously using some of those melodic cliches that remind us of like sea shanties or folk music, but he's doing it in a way, he's wrapping it up in this package that feels fresh and it feels timeless. Like, I don't know, this is music that would be really fun to cover live.
Yeah, what's so amazing about this is, yeah, I think a lot of composers would choose to score a game like Monkey Island completely in trying to make it sound, you know, like pirate music sea shanties and everything. But so much of these composers' choices were about integrating that kind of music with this sort of American jazz idiom as well. And it's just so creative. Yeah. And again, so many great tunes.
Well, let's do another one of these where we focus on the second half of this piece of music. We'll fade up with the end of this track, Fractal Aquilon, from Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, which was composed by a multitude of composers, but this is a Grant Kirkhope composition. And Will originally brought this in on a previous show and tell.
So it has a fantastic melody and a really kind of exciting orchestral ending.
Yeah, so let's take a listen to the last chunk of Fractal Aquilon. Now, speaking of endings, this feels like this would be right at home for the end credits of a movie. It just feels so final and just epic. It's crazy that this wasn't the end credits theme of this game.
Well, it's like the ending of Jupiter from The Planets. Like, it's just this huge brass sound. Or I guess Mars also has like a sort of big brassy ending.
Yeah, it's
like
so
that.
Fat. It's just the fattest thing ever.
It's so
ever.
Fantastic. Again, a great theme, really captures this sort of film music sense of harmony and orchestration. But yeah, that ending almost dips its toe into the water to, you know, I mean, I think, and Grant has talked about this, you know, a lot of his influences are not only from film music, but sort of British classical composers, people like Elgar and Holst,
you can hear
and
that
Ralph Vaughan Williams, and you can hear that sense of orchestration, particularly in that ending. I like how it was recorded. You get some of the distortion from the brass, like the audio is really peaking, which is something I miss from old film music. You know, the sound of when the brass are playing loudly, you get this kind of distortion.
Because I think what it does is it kind of drives home the point that like this is like 11 out of 10 epicness. Like, it's like almost too much. Like, you can't even handle
very articulately said
how much it is. So we're gonna move on to a beautiful little duet here, piano and violin. This comes to us from Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows, which was the kind of the first expansion pack to Shovel Knight, featuring new music by Jake Kaufman here. This is so beautiful. This is one of the final tracks in the game and features real performance here, real violin. I think Jeff Ball is who's on violin here. So beautiful. Let's take a listen to Will. I'm going to have you pronounce this wonderful piece of music.
Le Bouquet Magique from Shovel Knight, Plague of Shadows.
You guys are listening to a pretty piece of music. I'm not going to try. I don't want the emails. A pretty piece of music from Shovel Knight, Plague of Shadows.
Le Bouquet Magique.
Exactly. Composed by Jake Kaufman, featuring Jeff Ball on violin.
Oh, Le Bouquet Magique.
Yeah, this was this really wowed us. This floored us when we were listening to this and when we spotlighted. We did a spotlight on Plague of Shadows, actually, I believe. May have been a bonus episode.
God, this is great.
Yeah, it's so gorgeous. I mean, Jake Kaufman just can wear any hat that he wants and does it with such
ease. I mean, he really nails this French tradition, this sort of mixture of classical and jazz harmony, which was really popular in a lot of French music of this era. Particularly, there's a moment that happens in the A section when the melody returns to this spot and you get this minor substituted chord.
Right.
That is a move that functions both in the jazz world, but especially in the classical world.
Sure.
It's this kind of thing that I hear all the time, you know, going to school, I hear it in a lot of like French art songs, actually, or in different like opera arias. Like that kind of harmonic move is really popular in sort of the Romantic era.
Yeah, this is incredibly on the nose. Guys, why don't we fade up the ending of this track and see how Jake decides to end this here. It's really beautiful stuff. Here we go. Nice job, Jeff, getting that high note on the violin, but really beautiful little final arpeggio that Jake plays, ending with that really pretty high chord on the piano. Just a gorgeous, delicate ending to a very delicate and beautiful piece.
Yeah, what's sort of funny is the thing that I love about an ending is if you're, you know, sort of existing within a traditional tonal realm, for the most part, all the crazy stuff you do at the beginning and middle of a piece, at the end of the day, for the most part, and again, I'm talking generally, we're probably going to be ending with some variation of a major chord or a minor chord.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so many ways that you can voice and orchestrate that. So what I kind of love is how composers, with that incredible limited set of tools that we're just given, which are the musical scales and modes,
mm-hmm.
is how can you kind of make an ending your own? What's the certain way? Do you want the third on top? Do you want the fifth on top? Do you want the root on top?
Do you want to add the second?
How much weight on the chord? Yeah, are you going to add sort of, is it going to be this dreamy wash of major sevenths and ninths? Is it going to be very short and abrupt? Is it arpeggio? You actually realize, oh, you do have a lot of choices in terms of how to end this thing. And I think sometimes that's when composers can actually be their most creative, is in those moments when you feel like you're confined to this set of limitations that every composer has been confined to.
I totally agree. Well, let's move on to a really short piece of music that we get to play in its entirety. So, so beautiful. This melody still makes me tear up. I don't know. It's just one of those pieces that for some reason reminds me of my childhood, even though this game didn't come out in my childhood.
It just puts me
back in that headspace. This is Rosalina's story theme from Super Mario Galaxy, composed by, for the second time today, Mihiro Yokota. So speaking of what Will was talking about with the limitations of ending on a major chord, another really inventive way that Mihiro Yokota decided to end this with a really interesting riff, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, really catchy way of ending that piece and very fitting. Yeah, this is, Will was saying, maybe the most beautiful melody that Mihiro Yokota has ever composed. I think it's so impressive that he was able to emulate Koji Kondo's style for the Mario series in a way that when you're listening to it, you're not thinking, oh, is this a new composer? This is Mario. This is just a classic Nintendo lullaby. And lullabies, even though they're child-friendly and seem simple, that doesn't mean that they're easy to compose.
Oh, absolutely. The opposite is true. The melodies that are the most accessible and feel the most inevitable are sometimes the ones that are the most slaved over. Because it's really hard, and we're competing with hundreds of years of fantastic melodies using sort of the same boundaries and limitations that we're confined to. Now, this is, I think, one of Mihiro Yokota's crowning achievements, one of the greatest Nintendo themes in the last many years. What's great about how it functions formally is that in the context of reading these storybooks, this theme just loops over and over again, but almost in the way that a music box does, where when you get to the end of it, you have a few seconds and then it just starts over again from the top. It kind of like something Koji Kondo did in like Yoshi's Island, where you have this complete form and then it just loops completely from the top. There's not this idea that happens with a lot of video game music that you go straight from the end back into the beginning and you have this sort of seamless form. Here, there is a complete ending, and the whole track wholesale just gets looped because it's going for that effect of being like a music box, which is something you associate with, you know, being in a child's room.
So I just have to assume that Mario Odyssey is going to be scored by Mihiro Yokota. I really, really hope so.
That new main theme has got to be
him. It's got to be him.
That particular, there's like a B section that goes, which just like, that feels very much like
him. It's very Galaxy-ish. Well, guys, let's go back to the world of Game Overs, and we're going to play a couple in a row here. Let's start off with a track for the Genesis here. This is Masato Nakamura's take on a kind of a snarly Game Over theme that has a similar emotion.
It's also
with the
making
DKC
fun
2
of me.
It's making fun of the player a little bit. Let's take a listen to Game Over from Sonic the Hedgehog. Really interesting. So obviously he's using the main Sonic theme, making it like a little bit screwy and just kind of jokey. But there's actually some really weird and dissonant things going on with the PSG channels in the background that are kind of soft. providing some dissonances, and then obviously ending on that final note with a really wide vibrato. It's just so snarly. And
I used to hate this as a kid, because
really?
Sonic is a very unforgiving game in that when you get game over, you got to go back to the very beginning of the game, which, I mean, I guess Mario is,
except for Sonic
Mario
3,
is that way too, but Mario, you know, pulls no punches. You know, sort of from the beginning what kind of game you get, where Sonic feels,
right.
You know, it's 16-bit, you know, this is the era where games conventionally have saves.
Yeah, so can we spend a couple minutes talking about how this ending is, why is this an effective choice to end on that long sustaining ding, and then it's going to go right back into Sega as soon as that ends.
Well, I think it's a tactic that I imagine was born in the arcade era, where the idea of taunting the player, and I mean the idea of game over in general in lives, are a carryover from when you have to put tokens in a machine. But the idea of like taunting the player, it's kind of like going up to a kid who's fallen down and say na 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 na, and then you know, they get up and start chasing you. It's a way of like daring them to put more money in the machine, mm-hmm. to say, I bet you can't beat me.
I mean, pretty much Masato is telling the players, are you yella? You're a chicken. You can't play this game anymore. And we're like, yeah, we can.
The
we
thing
try
that's
again.
So funny, and just seeing how games have developed now, something like that would seem so antiquated. I mean, the idea of lives and game overs is like this vestigial thing that existed in games for
it
so
was
much
the norm.
Longer than they really needed to.
It probably shouldn't have existed as long as it did. Yeah, game over.
You know, continues, the idea of like a continue, it's like, what is that? Continue.
Why? Yeah.
In arcades was just when you put another quarter in the machine.
But at the same time, that was the way that they added challenge to the game. So it's like, you know, otherwise the game would be so easy.
Right, yeah. I mean, those games were designed around the idea that you only have so many lives.
And I'm really grateful for that, because it meant that we got to listen to those tunes over and over and over and love them so much. So
well, and it made short games feel a little bit lengthier.
Right, well, let's play one more game over theme for the Genesis. This is a little bit lesser known game, really killer soundtrack, Devilish by Hitoshi Sakimoto, actually. Let's take a listen to his game over for the Genesis. Wasn't expecting that major seventh on top. Will, what are your thoughts on that chord progression and kind of the surprising choice of that N major seventh chord?
Yeah, it's this wonderful dreamlike chord sequence that's sort of taking this progression and just modulating it down and down and down. It has this very
dreamlike
quality. Yeah, and then ending with the seventh is that one last little tint. If it would have just ended on a major triad, you would have felt this sense of completion, like everything's done. Ah, but by ending
it's not quite done.
And this is so funny. It's like when we were talking about with Dave Wise, he ends on a dominant seventh, which has this kind of bluesy jazz swankiness to it. But this major seventh, it's a little bit
dreamy.
More of a serious thing, but it has this melancholy, this yearning. It's something isn't complete, something isn't fulfilled in
so
it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Well, Hitoshi Sakimoto is leaving the player with a different emotion than the Sonic or the DKZ2 was. It's leaving them with a little bit of hope and optimism, and like there's still more to the adventure. I think this is, I believe Devilish is a pinball game, so I mean I don't know how much adventure you're gonna have. I should double check that, but yeah, I mean, whatever the case, I mean, Sakimoto definitely is showing that.
I mean, it's devilishly good. This is beautiful.
It's devilishly good. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of different emotions that you can convey for a game over theme. It doesn't just have to be na-na-na-boo-boo.
For sure. You know, it's interesting. I think there's comparisons that can be drawn from this piece of music that we just played, and the next piece of music that we're going to play. There's sort of a similar melodic thing that happens towards the ending of our track of the week.
Let's move on to this week's track of the week. This comes to us from Star Fox 64, and finally this Wikipedia page loaded here. Before we play this, it looks like Devilish is actually a breakout clone, so Not pinball, but pretty dang close, right? Okay, so Star Fox 64, this wasn't actually a choice that me and Will originally thought of for this playlist. It was added near the end, and we're so grateful that we added this because I think it's both of our favorite staff credits when it comes to video games. And not just the fact that it's a great staff credits theme, the ending of this piece is right. So beautiful.
The ending of the ending is the ending particularly of the ending. Amazing. Well, and just to talk about context a little bit, you know, we've talked with the Game Overs how sometimes they'll do sort of a theme in variations of either the main theme or an existing mm-hmm. theme, like we saw in the case of Dave Wise. But what's great about this piece is it does sort of a similar effect where it takes the music that you hear when you complete a level, and Koji Kondo uses it as the basis of this staff roll. Now, I don't know which he composed first, if he composed the end credits and then that was extrapolated for the level complete theme, or if he composed the level complete theme first. But it's this brilliant kind of, again, the idea with so much of this film music, the idea with so much of this game music is that they wanted it to feel like a movie. And yes. One of the trademarks of film music is the idea of leitmotif, is the idea of that themes have connections to characters. And in games, it's not as effective to write a theme for a character unless it's like a role-playing game. What you write themes for are either the levels or the event. So here we have a theme for victory, and the idea that that comes back at the end is a really powerful thing.
Well, why don't we play a little bit of the top of it, and then we'll crossfade to the end. Let's take a listen to staff credits from Star Fox 64. So guys, we're going to talk just briefly, kind of set up what's about to happen, and then we're going to crossfade and listen to how this piece concludes itself. Koji Kondo, ladies and gentlemen.
This, what's so great about this ending is it is so cinematic, and the music, like the things we've heard before, sort of develops because the visuals are changing. It tries to sort of mimic Star Wars a little bit towards the end and doing sort of a nod to that.
Right.
But this is just one of Koji Kondo's greatest themes, and the orchestration here I think is so lovely. You almost sort of get the blueprints for what would become the style of Super Mario Galaxy with those
yes,
kind of string rhythms. The bum, 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 bum,
well, because it's in a similar sci-fi action context and
right.
It's trying to sound like Star Wars and stuff. So why don't we go to the end of this piece and see how Koji Kondo concludes this wonderful adventure of Star Fox 64 here. can't think of a better ending to a video game than that. Wow, that is the staff credits theme composed by Koji Kondo. What a master.
Yeah, and it just, it keeps going and keeps, yeah, kind of, it isolates itself on those final two chords, really pulling you in. And then with that final, like, choral gesture that is just...
It's amazing.
Just breathtaking. I mean, this
is one of the examples. I've talked about this a few times before where this is actually better than the game necessarily deserves. I mean, Star Fox 64, it's a fun game, but like, it doesn't necessarily need this level of gorgeous music, but I'm so glad that it has it. I mean, this is just one of the absolute best ever heard.
It's so fantastic.
If it
was the ending to Ocarina of Time,
we would all be bawling.
Yeah, if it was the ending to, you know, a classic film, it's really amazing. I will say that the last 50 seconds of this piece, I think, are probably some of the most influential bits of music for me personally as a composer, in the idea of how to narratively end an orchestral piece. I can think of so many things I've done where the endings themselves have been influenced by this in a lot of my orchestral music, and I didn't necessarily even realize it until, you know, kind of experiencing it again, but it's just one of my all-time favorites. It's so delightful.
Well, let's move on to a modern example from a series that was one of the first things we thought about, of having really long pieces of music that have so many sections and that end that we didn't have time to get to. Let's play a track from World of Warcraft, Warlords of Draenor. This is a beautiful piece of music called Wolf at the Gates, and it's over 8 minutes long. So even if we did focus on this on a regular playlist, we wouldn't have gotten to the ending. So let's just play the ending of this track. We'll play, you know, about a minute and 20 seconds of this. This is composed by Russell Brower, Neil Cree, and Clint Bajakian. Let's take a listen to Wolf at the Gates. That is Wolf at the Gates from Warlords of Draenor. We have Russell Brower, Neil Cree, and Clint Bajakian to thank for the score. Holy moly. That is incredibly beautiful.
I mean, the use of choir and orchestra, it is... it's sort of as epic you can get in sort of the classical and symphonic tradition. It really has this like ritualistic... quality to it. I mean, I think of something like Duel of the Fates from Phantom Menace.
Will, what are some other ways you can get epic in music? Let's say not in the orchestral realm. I guess you could get epic with like a really slow, like drudge, like sludge metal song. That could
be epic. Have you ever seen the movie Spinal Tap? You know, he has that guitar amp that goes up to 11.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of ways to get epic. This is one way. It's interesting. I'm listening to this in the context of hearing Jeremy Soule's work with Dragonborn, because it's kind of that same style.
Yeah.
And what's cool is now we're going to get another final example of how Jeremy Soule evoked modern film music in his game work.
Totally,
with the next track.
I mean, I've just been so enjoying this episode of sort of recontextualizing this music again and focusing on sort of the other end. Listening to that World of Warcraft track really made me realize we have to have the boys from the OC podcast, Steven and Brian, back on to do another episode focusing on that music. There's so much great stuff in that incredibly massive series.
Well, we're going to move on to the last track of the day. And like I said, I alluded, this is another Jeremy Soule track. And this comes way before his work with Skyrim. This is Total Annihilation. And what we're going to do is we're going to do the same thing we did for that Warlords, is we're going to fade up and play the last little chunk here of The March Unto Death. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on this journey as we explored some of the best endings that we could think of for video games. And there's so many amazing ones. Like, obviously, this is just a topic that we could have a million installments of. So yeah, we're well aware there's a lot of great endings that we didn't get to. But this was just something to kind of touch on. Something that, you know, typically doesn't get explored too much on our podcast.
Yeah, and it really comes out of just years of doing this show and sort of identifying a potential flaw in sort of our format that, you know, we try to keep our episodes to sort of a listenable length. And a big part of it is sort of discussing music. And
also we try to play as much music as we can on an episode to make it feel like it's, you know, interesting.
So this was sort of a way of us to focus on sort of the dark side of the moon, to kind of like go to the other side of the pieces that we're sort of not typically showing to you.
And I enjoyed it.
And focusing on the other end, you know.
Well, guys, we're excited to be back, you know, for this 11th season, and next week is just going to be a nice, you know, normal, fun episode. And what we're going to do is we're going to play you out with a track from Transistor. It's Forecast. We'll fade in near the end, and you guys get to hear the end. So the way that this track ends is a technique that we haven't really heard today, and it's kind of a modern technique, and what it does is it just kind of dies, where you just hear, you know, the elements of the song, and then they just, boom, they just stop kind of abruptly.
Sure.
Which is really cool. So yeah, this has been fun. Let's do a couple plugs here at the end. We have some recent videos that we've posted of a recording session of the live Mercado Bros band. So you can head on over to our YouTube channel and check those out. Our website, supermercadobros.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Thanks to everyone for leaving a nice review there. Some new subscribers. We really appreciate that. We have a Patreon. You can support us there. And also we're on Twitter at Mercado Bros and Facebook. So yeah, feel free to drop us a comment.
Yeah, and also episodes like this require kind of a different level of preparation, which is one of the reasons why we didn't do this last week, because we really try to start every season out with sort of an exciting episode that not just plays good music, but is meant to be sort of a little bit of an editorial experience.
Thinks about it in a different way. So it took a while to prepare. So yeah, we're looking forward to just a nice, fun, normal episode, getting back in the swing of it. All right, guys, I think we should get rolling. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Have a great week, everyone.
Peace out. We'll be right back.